Three, four, five, six, right. Like we got everybody here, just about we need. Right, are you getting quorum here, Siri? I think we one, two, four, five, six.
Need seven. One, two, three, yeah.
Seven.
Yep.
Okay, and Marianne Carbone sent me a note saying she might be having computer problems. So
Okay.
she's going to try again with her laptop. So keep an eye out. She
I
might show
will.
up in the participant or in the non-participant. Yeah, okay. Okay. We're just about there.
Oh, she's here. Let's
All
see.
right, good.
Let me make sure she's a. Oh, where'd she go? There she goes. Great.
Okay, the time is 1:30. Just in case anybody forgot, this is the Monterey Bay Air Resources District meeting for October 20th, 2021. Thank you for attending, and we'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. And with that, why don't we go ahead and start with the Pledge of Allegiance? Let's see. We had Mariette. Jack, you want to lead us?
Of course. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Terrific. Thank you very much. Okay, Siri, why don't you go ahead and call the roll?
All right. Director Dillis?
Here.
Director Story?
Here.
Director Phillips?
He will be here shortly.
Thank you. Director Eskew? Here. Chair McChain?
Here.
Director Lopez?
Here.
Director Labar?
Present.
Director Friend? Director Coonerty? Director Carbone?
Here.
Director Kosumiki?
Here.
One, two, three, four, five, six. We have seven. There is quorum, sir.
Excellent. Okay. We'll go ahead and get started with public comment. Anyone that wishes to speak to items not on the agenda, now's your chance. Just looking to see if we have any hands raised from attendees. Don't see any. I don't know if you see anything, Siri.
I don't see anything, and we did not receive any written comments ahead of the meeting.
Well, thank you very much. The next item is an action item, and it is pursuant to AB 361 regarding remote meetings and, well, other accommodations as a result of COVID-19. We took this up in the exec committee. Rich, you want to introduce it, or perhaps Les?
Sure. I'll try to do it really quickly, since most of you probably have already been through this rodeo in the past. So as you're all most likely aware, we are conducting our previous meetings during the pandemic in accordance with the governor's executive order N-08-21, which suspended some of the Brown Act rules for teleconferencing. That order expired on September 30th, 2021. On September 16th, the governor then signed AB 361 into law, which allows for the legislative body to continue to meet via teleconferencing with the relaxed Brown Act requirements as long as certain findings are made. And the conditions we're operating under now is that we still are operating under a state of emergency, and the Monterey County Health Officer has made specific recommendations and recommended measures to promote social distancing in an effort to reduce COVID-19 transmission. So those findings can be made to be consistent with the requirements of AB 361. The way that AB 361 is currently written, we'll have to do this every 30 days. So if the next meeting fell outside that time, we'd have to have a special meeting within that 30-day time period. But it looks like our next meeting is scheduled for December 17th, which is within the 30-day time period covered by the attached resolution. So I'd also just want to thank Les for his assistance in putting together the staff report and resolution. And it's my understanding that he's going to be reaching out to some Assemblymember Rivas's office to work on some cleanup language for AB 361, because as many legislative bodies that are they're out there, we have about that many interpretations of the law. So it would be nice to get some clarity around AB 361 going forward. But this is a stopgap measure for the next 30 days. And I don't know if you have anything to say, Les, to add to that.
I think you covered it, Richard. Thank you. Just real quickly. So I'm going to speak to the Assemblyman's staff about cleaning up two items addressing the 30-day requirement, because a lot of legislative bodies meet less frequently than every 30 days. And so it would require special meetings to adopt the required findings going forward. And also allowing the primary legislative body for an agency to make the findings for all subsidiary legislative bodies. Each committee of this district, of the Board of Supervisors, of city councils, is a defined legislative body under the Brown Act. And in my opinion, each of them have to make the necessary findings to continue to meet remotely. And so we hope that the assemblyman might carry some cleanup language to let the primary legislative body, i.e. This board, the Board of Supervisors, or a city council, make findings for all related or subsidiary bodies. So we'll keep you informed of how that progresses. Any cleanup legislation won't take effect immediately. However, the legislature is not in session, so it would take effect if adopted sometime after January 1. Thank you.
Thank you, Les. Thank you, Rich. Any questions from board members? Okay.
Chair, this is LeBar.
Sure.
I just want to let my fellow board members know that I will be voting no today on this. I do apologize not submitting in writing prior, a couple concerns I have with some of the wording. But that's the only reason voting no today, because of the lateness of my actions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any questions, other board members? I'm not seeing any hands. Okay. Public, you seen anything, Siri?
No hands and nothing written in advance.
Okay. So we're coming back.
To the board. Mr. Chair, this is Zach. I'll move the recommended actions.
Thank you very much. Director Friend, is there a second?
A few seconds.
Okay.
That was a second?
I think that was Director McAdam. I mean, Askew, sorry.
Thank you.
God. Okay, we have a proper motion and a second. Yes, Siri, you want to go ahead and call the roll?
Will do.
Thank you.
Director Dulles.
Yes.
Director Story.
Aye.
Director Phillips, have you arrived?
Aye.
Thank you, sir. Director Askew.
Aye.
Chair McChain.
Yeah.
Director Lopez.
Aye.
Director LeBar.
Nay.
Thank you. Director Friend.
Aye.
Director Coonerty, have you arrived? No, okay. Director Carbone.
Aye.
Director Kosamiki.
Aye.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 yay and 1 nay.
Okay. Thank you. All right. We carry on. Reports by committee chairs on committee meetings and so forth. We had our budget personnel nominee committee. We took action just like we did on AB 361. And we approved and certainly, as you'll see in the consent agenda, there's some minor budget revisions, including accommodations for a grant that we got from the EPA. So that got the thumbs up. And outside of that, nothing else to report. Why don't we go ahead to advisory committee? I'm not sure if we had a meeting. Did we, Rich?
No, Mr. Chair, we did not meet. We really wanted to meet this month. However, AB 361 sort of got in the way. It was just right after that came into signing. And then we also have a new member who wouldn't be on board until after today's meeting. So we decided to wait. We will be holding a meeting next month.
Excellent. Okay. Any questions from board members? Seeing none. Just looking at attendees, seeing none. Okay. Moving on to any referrals or comments from board members, just items in general, anything anybody would like to share? Now's a chance. Well, I'll just say there was an interesting article in today's Herald commentary section reflecting on Assembly Bill 1346, where the author of the bill claims that gas-powered lawn equipment is set to surpass emissions from passenger vehicles this year. So some pretty strict direction as to moving towards all electric, which maybe Rich can comment on, but an important step and one that I'm sure will probably have a pretty big impact as it's set to come into effect in the coming 3, 4 years, 5 years by CARB. Yeah. Okay. Rich, how about your report?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I'll try to get through this quickly. I've got three pages, but sort of large font. So in our engineering on October 6th, our inspector, Sean Boyle, did a presentation to the CAPCOA, the California Air Pollution Control Officers Association enforcement managers about asbestos, national emission standard for hazardous air pollutants, and introduced a discussion on naturally occurring asbestos, which is a problem in our jurisdiction. You'll probably be hearing more from me about this in future meetings, especially down in the King City, Gonzales area. We're working on trying to get some funds together to provide for mapping of natural occurring asbestos, which can be a problem when the winds blow and you're doing construction or grading. Three of our inspectors attended a training the week of October 11th in Ventura. The training included how to use a vapor analyzer, a toxics vapor analyzer, and it can detect methane and is useful for fugitive emissions at oil fields and landfills. We've actually, in the consent agenda that was approved, had moved around some monies to enable us to purchase the $20,000 piece of equipment this year. On October 18th and 19th, our engineer Song Kim conducted training on a software tool called Hotspots Analysis and Reporting Program, that's HARP, for other air district staff throughout the state. And this is the HARP program is used by air districts to conduct emission inventories and estimate health risk from those emissions. We conducted interviews for the open engineer position on October 18th, and we'll be moving candidates forward for a second interview probably next week. And then, as Steve mentioned earlier, the governor signed Assembly Bill 1346 prohibiting the production of new gasoline-powered small off-road engines by the latter part of January 2024, or as soon as the California Air Resources Board deems feasible. These engines are typically used in lawn and garden equipment, such as lawnmowers and leaf blowers. The bill also calls upon CARB to identify incentive funding to support the transition to zero emission equipment. And believe me, we've been working on trying to get a lawn and garden incentive program going. One of the problems is we have a really really water miser community because of the water shortages here. So we don't have a lot of lawns. So a lawnmower program probably wouldn't be the best use of funds. Leaf blowers are a concern. Monterey County has adopted an ordinance relative to leaf blowers, as has Santa Cruz City. So we're trying to work where we can in this area, but one of the things that Steve mentioned about the emissions from these, we really don't have any good data. We don't know how many pieces of equipment are out there, what the vintage is. Obviously, the really old stuff is really nasty and actually causes personal exposure to those people that are operating that equipment. So there's a lot of nasties in the emissions. But we don't anticipate that we're going to see any impact on our overall ambient air quality as a result of this new law or rule. Finally, the standing item, we have not received any complaints regarding marina in the marina area relative to the landfill or other potential sources. Planning and air monitoring, the e-bike incentive program is now open, and we've had only two applications received so far, but we've been receiving a lot of interest, and we expect that to ramp up because, after all, in order to submit an application, they have to be low-income qualified and go through Central Coast Energy Services a gauntlet to determine whether or not they qualify. So once those applicants get through those gates, they'll be submitting applications. So we've gotten really good feedback from the bike industry, the e-bike industry throughout the country, saying that they really appreciate what we're trying to do with this program. So it's nice to at least get some positive feedback out there. And the public too is generally excited. Our 2021-22 wood stove changeout program launched on September 28th. We've got about $90,000 in local funds for this year's program. That's in comparison to 750 a couple of years back and 500 last year, but those were state funds. We understand that the governor has set aside $5 million in this year's budget for air districts to implement wood stove changeout programs going forward in the next fiscal year. So we expect to add a lot of funding to that program going forward. But this next year, we're sort of limited because we're using our own funds. It's sort of nice, too, because we don't have all the contractual strings attached that we usually have when we spend the state's money. The Monterey Bay Electric Vehicle Incentive Program is charging right along, pun intended. And we've received 57 applications and we've obligated about $75,000 so far. So we still have a healthy balance of about $375,000 remaining in that account. We hope to get through that. We'll try to increase some of our outreach to get folks into an electric vehicle, a lease or buy. Also, we started up our San Lorenzo Valley Seasonal Air Monitoring Network, which measures elevated wintertime smoke emissions from heating devices. So that was installed earlier this month. And then also concurrent with that, we have the San Lorenzo Valley Spare the Air program that will start this next month. And that's when we have deteriorating conditions, meteorological or air quality wise, we issue a spare the air alert, which asks for residents to voluntarily refrain from using devices or fuels that would contribute to wood smoke pollution throughout the area. The Bonnie Doon Elementary School District just received an all-electric bus through the district's zero-emission school bus program, and that was funded along with contributions from Central Coast Community Energy funds as well. On outreach, we had a really good successful outing at on October 3rd, Saturday, at the Salinas Railroad Depot. And this was an event, a ride and drive, electric vehicle ride and drive event put on by Ecology Action. We helped sponsor that. There were many attractions, electric cars, motorcycles, and e-bikes on display, and a bunch of activities for the families that attended. And it was a good time, was had by all, and very well in, attended and well received. So I'd like to thank David and Siri and Ty, our staff that attended that fair and helped to make it a success. Lastly, I just would let you know that Central Coast Community Energy is asking member agencies to identify roughly 1,500 square feet or more of accessible space in which they can locate a 1 megawatt to 5 megawatt battery energy storage system to help with their deployment of over 100 megawatts of distributed battery supported energy throughout our service area. So these are the front of the meter distributed systems that enhance grid reliability by addressing the intermittency of renewable resources such as solar and wind. So if you're interested and you've got some property, contact J.R. Killigrew at 3CE and include a potential list of locations that you may have available that could support a battery backup system. I'm not speaking to King City. Obviously, you guys have your own CC either and are doing really well, but this could be a really great deal. We were looking at our facility here to see if we had room. We don't really have room, but we do have some property out near Highway 68 that we'd like to take a look at with the county and determine if that may be a location that could be used as well. So with that, that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Rich. Chock full of information. I see Director Labar's hand up. Director Labar.
Thank you. And one thing with CCA is we can always work on projects together. But I had a couple questions on the asbestos one, Richard, specifically since you mentioned King City and our area down here.
Yes.
So it sounds like it'll be the ability to start collecting data for a new monitoring program.
First, we have to determine where the asbestos is actually situated, and that's done through geological mapping. And so a lot of mapping has been done, and we know that there are sources or areas of high deposits of asbestos throughout our region, namely South County. And we have some projects that are occurring right now that have kicked up this whole issue relative to monitoring of asbestos, especially some projects that are near schools. So we have worked with some contractors and consultants on designing monitoring systems to help detect asbestos that may be generated or getting off the site. I should also say it's sort of like a very third world answer to this is just apply water on most of the construction activities and keep the dust down, and that greatly reduces any transmission or emission of asbestos from those operations. So that's especially important when we know that folks are operating in those types of areas.
Oh, and I appreciate that. And I do understand the concern regarding asbestos, right? But I also have a concern if it starts affecting the ability for projects or construction projects down in our area, or if it starts raising the cost of that. So as we move forward, I hope that we really talk about how those regulations look like, what kind of requirements are necessary. I do agree water is going to be one of the biggest things.
Yeah. And, well, we'll definitely keep you informed, but I think right now we're working with a professor from one of the universities in California that has done a lot of mapping throughout the area. And so just getting a handle on where these deposits are is really essential so that if you do have a project coming forward, you don't find out about it in the middle of the project. And that could be one of the most costly scenarios. So being able to plan for it, I think, says a lot to keeping the cost down as you move forward with identifying areas that are going to be developed.
Okay, and I appreciate that, just keeping us informed and in the loop.
Will do.
I don't want to see us punished for something that's natural. And it's already hard enough for areas down here to do construction, but I do appreciate the Air Board's working with many of the projects that we've had. It's been an awesome relationship. So thank you. Thank you, Chair.
And if I just may say, we're really sensitive to your the comments you have, and we've heard those before from folks that are regulated, but a lot of this is regulations that are already on the books that we're enforcing for EPA under their national emission standards. So, you know, we don't have a lot of options. We don't anticipate that we're going to make our own rules that would be, for instance, more stringent than what the feds already have.
Great. Thank you very much, Director LaBar. Any other questions for Rich? Maybe just two things, Rich. If you could share the information, you know, just in case people don't have it on, I think you may have it. I think I sent it to you from Central Coast Community Energy on that, that battery storage. That'd be great. You know, just so all of our jurisdictions get the word on that. Also, just kudos to Siri, I'm imagining, the press officer there, front page of the local section in the Herald on e-bikes coming out of the district. And I don't know if this ran in the Sentinel as well, but just was great to see that. And it's great to see the enthusiasm. So thank you. Director Carbone. You're muted there. Let's see. Can you unmute her, Siri?
I haven't. Sorry. I was wondering if there was any way of getting a sample resolution of a blower ordinance for what, you know, since they put off some pretty bad emissions or and since the governor's bill 1346 will still be a couple years off, is there anything that I've been hearing complaints in our city about leaf blowers. So if there's something that I could get sent over to me.
I think Pacific Grove passed one.
A Pacific Grove, okay.
And then, City of Monterey.
Okay, there you go.
Okay, City of Monterey. All right, Thank you.
I'll get you a copy. There's a number of them. There's probably a model one out there somewhere.
Okay, thank you. And one of my council women attended the train station electric vehicle, and she said it was great. And she asked me how to inquire about doing something like that in our neck of the woods. So I said I would check into that. So.
Yeah, whether it's Rich or through Central Coast Community Energy, great, great. Yeah, let's follow up there. That was tremendously successful. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so seeing none other, I'm just looking to the attendees or if there's any member of the public that has comments on the APCO report. I'm not seeing anything. Siri, anything received?
Nothing here and nothing submitted in advance.
Okay, it's time for the consent agenda. We have 10 items on the consent agenda. Is there any member of the board that would like to pull an item from the consent agenda? Seeing none, going to the public, not seeing any hands, nothing there, okay.
Nothing received in advance, sir.
Thank you, Siri. So we'll come back to the board for a motion and a second on the consent agenda.
This is Story. I'll move the consent agenda.
Thank you. Don't all jump at once.
Thank you. Cosmicky.
All right. Thank you very much, Colin. Okay. So we have a motion by Story, second by Cosmicky. Siri, you want to go ahead and call the roll?
Yes, sir. Okay. We'll start in the middle. Director Coonerty.
Yes.
Thank you. Director Friend.
Aye.
Director Carbone.
Aye.
Director Cosmicky.
Aye.
Director Lopez.
Aye.
Director Labar.
Aye.
Chair McChain.
Yeah.
Director Askew.
Aye.
Director Phillips.
Aye.
Director Story.
Aye.
Director Dillis.
Aye.
Unanimously approved.
Great. Thank you. We have three items on our regular agenda today, including two presentations and an action item. I just want to be sensitive to whether or not some directors may need to bow out. I want to make sure we maintain a quorum. Would it be problematic if we take up the item 21 first, Rich, before we get to items 19 and 20?
No, I'm fine.
Okay, that's appreciated. Okay, so let's take up the action item first, and that's to approve our non-discrimination policy, complaint procedure, and accessibility policy. Hopefully this doesn't throw Amy off, shuffling the deck a little bit. Okay, so Amy Climo.
Sure thing. All right. There we go. Okay. So I'm going to go over today the just non-discrimination policies in your board packet. And I'm going to first discuss the federal requirements, and then I'll review the policies. And the EPA grant that was on the board consent agenda item today kind of is what sparked this these policies. And EPA informed us of the need to have transparent and documented non-discrimination policies. And this provided us an opportunity to document a lot of the things that we're already doing and then look for areas to improve. And we went and looked at some other air districts. We looked at Bay Area Air Quality Management District in Santa Barbara to see what types of policies they had available on their websites for the same for non-discrimination policies. So the EPA implements the following non-discrimination regulations through 40 CFR parts 5 and 7. And so 40 CFR parts 5 and 7 address non-discrimination on the basis of sex and education programs or activities receiving federal financial assistance, and non-discrimination programs or activities receiving financial assistance from the Environmental Protection Agency. And so because we are receiving grant funds from EPA, they want to make sure that we have documentation that we are meeting these two parts. And this the policies also will cover, we get other EPA grants like the 105 grant and the 103 grant. And aspects of compliance with these regulations includes posting information in a prominent place, having complaint procedures, identifying a non-discrimination coordinator, ensuring public participation is available to all, and providing meaningful access to programs and activities for persons with limited English proficiency. So we do have some existing policies. We have an administrative policies and procedures manual, policy C4C, but this policy is really directed internally. And so the policy today is applicable to all. We also have accessibility. If you note at the bottom of all of our board agenda items, there is a note about providing access to our board meetings for those that may need assistance. And our website is hosted by a company called Streamline, and they have built-in accessibility, such as font color, font size, in order to make sure that those that need assistance, we don't have to, it's just built in. Anytime we make a new webpage, these fonts and colors and size are already in place. And then thanks to Suri, she added a Google Translate option. So at the top right of our, every page of our website, I took a little screenshot here. There's a Google Translate drop-down list where you can pick whatever language you would like, and it will translate all of the content on that webpage into that language. We've also really been trying to do a much better job of having all of our outreach items translated into Spanish. Our press releases, we've been doing radio and TV advertisements in Spanish. We have an air quality index video in Spanish. And then we also have staff available who can speak Spanish if we get callers needing that assistance. So this is just an example of what our website looks like. If you switch Google Translate to Spanish, it just translate all of the content on the web pages is translated to the language that you select. And then these are some of the examples of the outreach items that we have that are in Spanish, our air quality index video, our recent press release about the wood stove changeout program, and then also our press release about our e-bike program. So the two policies today are our non-discrimination policy and complaint procedure, and our accessibility policies. So EPA recommends having a non-discrimination statement, which is shown here and also in the board packet. And this would be at the top of our newly created website that will host this content. Next, the non-discrimination policy describes that we have fair and equal access to benefits of programs and activities that we administer. It includes a complaint procedure if someone feels they have been unfairly treated, and it includes a process for going through that and a form to fill out and submit, which we have created in both English and Spanish. Next are the accessibility policies, and these policies document our actions in the area of disability accommodations, website accessibility, and language assistance. And as I mentioned, we have taken actions to address these three areas. And upon board approval of these two policies, we will post them to our website so they're in a prominent location. And we'll also place copies on our bulletin board, which is located outside of our physical office here in Monterey. So with that, I will take any questions.
Thank you, Amy. An important policy, set of policies. I'm just looking here. I see Jack's hand. So Director Dillis, if you'd like to go.
Yes, thank you. I'm wondering, on the complaint procedure, I see that there's a review officer that considers any complaints, and then the APCO considers any appeals if there were an appeal of the complaint if somebody were unhappy with that. Is that the final step in our process, that in terms of our legal process, that would be it in terms of any appeals? It appears so.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Looking for other hands, if there's any questions from directors, seeing none. Looking to attendees, not seeing any hands.
I think received here in advance.
Oh, okay, great. So Siri, would you like to go ahead and read that?
Do you want me to read the resolution or take?
Oh, did you, sorry. Did you, oh, you didn't receive any in advance. I thought you did. Okay, sorry about that. Okay, we'll come. Sorry, we'll come back to the board. Looking for a motion to
approve. Labar, motion to approve.
Thank you, Director Labar. Is there a second?
Second.
Who's second? Is that Director Dillis?
Yeah, Director Dillis. Okay, properly moved and seconded. Siri, go ahead and call the roll.
Thank you, Director Story.
Aye.
Director Phillips.
Aye.
Director Dillis.
Yes.
Director Lopez.
Aye.
Chair McChain.
Yes.
Director Eskew. Director Eskew. Director Labar.
Sorry about that. I'm an aye for Director Eskew.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Director Labar.
Aye.
Director Friend.
Aye.
Director Kernite.
Aye.
Director Carbone.
Aye.
Director Kosamiki.
Aye.
Approved unanimously.
Thank you very much. We'll go back up to item 19. All Amy, all the time. Hope you're ready. So why don't we go ahead and you can tee up the presentation from Guy over at the Monterey Regional Waste Management District.
Sure, we have Guy Petreborg here from the Monterey Regional Waste Management District, and he's gonna talk today about the hydrogen sulfide treatment system they've installed out at the landfill. So I'll let, go ahead, Guy, thank you.
Great.
Thank you, good afternoon, Chair McShane, Board of Directors, and Executive Officer Stedman, and the district staff. Appreciate the opportunity to present some history and findings to you today. Just cue up the presentation. How's that look on your side?
Looks good.
Today I'll be presenting the presence of hydrogen sulfide in landfill gas and sulfur oxide emissions reduction associated with treatment of hydrogen sulfide. I'll present an introduction of the district to you, the Monterey Regional Waste Management District, that is, causes of hydrogen sulfide in landfill gas, the history of hydrogen sulfide in the landfill gas at the Monterey Peninsula landfill, as well as the history of treatment methods deployed at the landfill, and then end with a summary of the performance of those treatment methods and their effect on the sulfur oxide emission reductions. Monterey Regional Waste Management District is a California special district responsible for solid waste management. We have 9 member agencies along the western half of Monterey County. The 7 cities, Pebble Beach Community Service District, and Monterey County as our member agencies. And the district serves the Tri-County region with recycling, reuse, and non-hazardous municipal solid waste disposal services. So hydrogen sulfide is 2 molecules of hydrogen, 1 of sulfur. It is a colorless, flammable, and highly toxic gas that people generally recognize with a rotten egg smell. It is heavier than air and can collect in low-lying and poorly ventilated areas. And it is lethal at low concentrations. So it is a hazard. It is immediately lethal at 100 ppm or higher, and it can be lethal for sustained exposure at 50 ppm for 10 minutes or more. Can be found in natural gas, swamp gas, sewer gas, drain pipe gas, and landfill gas, which is our topic today. And for those who don't necessarily visualize one part per million as a concentration real quickly, it is 1/10,000th of 1%, or you can visualize it as a drop of water in the volume of two bathtubs, to kind of give you a visual comparison that that one part, what one part per million concentration represents. Hydrogen sulfide occurs naturally in the breakdown of organic matter, and you know, about half the waste in the landfill is organic matter, consisting of food waste, paper, cardboard, some yard waste, though that has decreased significantly in the past decade with diversion programs. Human and animal waste, sewage, biosolids are also potential causes of hydrogen sulfide. Gypsum board, you know, wallboard, sheetrock is a common construction material, and that is believed to be a significant source of H2S at the Monterey Peninsula landfill. Why is this important? Well, H2S is a toxic gas in and of itself, and when it is combusted, it will convert to sulfur dioxide, which is also a toxic gas, and can be the source of acid rain and, you know, affect watersheds and sensitive ecosystems. So neither form of hydrogen sulfide or the combusted version of the gas is considered healthy, or it is, they're both pollutants and they are both regulated. For landfills, there's a requirement that the emissions from the landfill be abated, and that is done through combustion devices. So there is generation of SOx emissions, and those are regulated at 150 pounds per day nominally through a federal regulation. And that can change over time, as I'll explain later. So this should be seen on your screen as a chart with the history of H2S in the landfill gas. Is that chart visible for all?
Yeah.
Great, thank you. So you, starting there on the left in there in 2005, you could see landfill H2S concentrations inside the landfill gas were plus or minus 100 parts per million. And then there towards 2014, there was a rapid increase in H2S concentration that's believed to be associated with some construction demolition debris disposal over the 2005 to 2015 period. There was a fair amount of activity, especially in the early part of that period in demolition debris disposal. There in 2017, the concentration of H2S in the landfill was so high that it did exceed the concentration that would result in 150 pounds per day of SOx emissions. And so there was an exceedance of the regulatory requirement, and that that exceedance was reported to the Air District, and that instigated a process of a change in the source and the requirement that the Waste Management District pursue best available control technology to address the that exceedance. The Waste Management District's first initial approach was to quickly deliver a temporary system to get treatment on site while a greater study was done about a permanent system. And this is a view of that temporary system. It consisted of two pairs of boxes. These are sealed boxes with a media inside the boxes. And the boxes were operated in series, one before the other, so the gas would flow through one box before flowing through the other box. And the two pairs split the total flow from the landfill in half and treated different halves of the landfill's gas. And this is a chart showing how those boxes performed. The landfill gas untreated is that blue line, the upper blue line, showing H2S concentrations in the 500 parts per million range, plus or minus. And the lower brown line or orange line is showing the results of the temporary systems treatment. Not all the landfill gas was being treated by that temporary system. Was treating a portion of the gas and then remixing that gas with untreated gas. So by the time the combined gas got to the destruction devices, that's the condition of the orange shown in the orange line. So it did reduce H2S concentration sufficiently to maintain compliance with 150 pounds per day. Here's an example in August of its performance before we terminated the use of that system. You can see that SOx emissions from the destruction devices were on the order of 100 pounds per day, plus or minus. And then towards the end of August, we received approval for a permanent treatment system, and that satisfied the best available control technology analysis requirements. And these are four large tanks, and two are operated at one time, and two are on standby to be used after the first two tanks are depleted. The gas in this case is a split first, and then half is sent through one tank and half is sent through the other tank. Slightly different media is being used in these tanks, and the tank media capacity is about twice the size of those boxes. So, allows for much longer use by the Waste Management District and less frequency of maintenance exchange on the media. So this is an example of the tank number one's performance. Again, the upper blue line is the untreated landfill gas from the field. And then the lower blue line orange line is the treated gas on the outlet of that tank. And those values are less than 20 parts per million on the outlet, while the inlet side is, they're around 500 or a little greater than 500 parts per million. So you can see that there was a significant level of treatment there while the temporary system was treating just below 300 parts per million. Tank number two, essentially the same kind of performance, a little different quality data, but generally still the field is above 500 parts per million and the treated gas is below 20 parts per million. And this is an example of the results of the new treatment system on the reducing the SOx emissions. And that's shown there towards the right-hand side of the chart where there's a steep drop in SOx emissions. So the portion with the higher SOx emissions on the left is the use of the temporary treatment system, while the lower SOx emissions on the right are the use of the permanent treatment system. So that quickly is the results of the Waste Management District's experience with elevated hydrogen sulfide concentrations and how to treat them with a couple different systems. And in closing, I'd like to thank the Air District and Executive Officer Mr. Stedman on supporting the Waste Management District on the Waste Management District's EV charging system project, where we installed 6 chargers, and very much appreciated that the Air District donated the equipment for the Waste Management District. And we have about 5 employees that appear to be using the system and a few visitors. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Guy. We'll look to the board for any questions. I see Director Carbone.
Thank you. Great presentation. And I just had one question with the SOx emissions on the chart that you showed. It showed that in the year 2014 that it increased due to construction debris disposal. And I was just wondering, what was the makeup in that disposal that made it increase so much? Was it just additional construction, or was it something just within the materials? That so
it was primarily a sheetrock material that's believed to be the material that made a change in the H2S concentration at the landfill. Prior to 2005, off this chart to the left, there were lower H2S concentrations, and there wasn't a significant change in the nature of the waste that the landfill was receiving. But it does seem like there was increased construction activity that, in the early mid 2000s, it affected this landfill. I was working for another employer in the Bay Area, and materials from Monterey County were being delivered to a landfill there, and it affected that landfill sharply as well. So it does, pretty solid certainty that it was sheetrock-like material in construction and demolition debris.
Wow. Okay, thank you so much for your presentation.
Great, thank you. Director Story?
Yes, thank you. And thank you, Guy, for that presentation on successfully reducing your hydrogen sulfide emissions. My question, I was just curious, after the hydrogen sulfide gases are treated or processed, what do you do with the residue or the byproducts of that treatment?
So the hydrogen sulfide is bound in the media that the gas is being passed through. So the the material is being retained in that media. And that can be, the media is changed out and actually disposed in the landfill. Because there is now, the two are now bound together, and it's not predicted to be released at, you know, in the landfill at a later date. So it's a chemical binding that's occurring in the media itself that's stripping the sulfur material out of the gas and letting the rest of the gas pass through.
Got it. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you. Any other directors with questions? Not seeing any. So we'll go to the public just real quick, going to look and see. I don't see any hands. Siri, anything received?
Nothing received.
Okay. This concludes this presentation. Thank you very much for putting that together and for being with us today.
So much appreciated opportunity. Thank you.
We'll go on to our next item and our final item, and that's the demonstration of the Acela permit and compliance database. Amy?
Good afternoon again. So we wanted to share with you our new database, Acela, that we've been using. So I'm going to talk to you, give you a little background about why we went live in a new database this year, what we were looking for in our new database, and the solution that we went with. And I'll give you a quick demo of what it looks like here from the office. So our legacy database, we went live in March 2016. And unfortunately, it ended up having limited functionality. We were not able to accept applications online. We have an on-premise server, and it creates, ended up having some issues when we had our ransomware attack in November last year with losing some data. And so we really wanted a cloud-hosted database. And that seems to be the way other agencies are moving, is towards the cloud hosting. And then we also have the issue of having a duplicative accounting database. So every month our permits renew, not every permit. Every permit has a renewal month. And so what ends up happening is we have a permit database, and then accounting also has an accounting database with all of the permit numbers in their database so that they can do that monthly billing. And so we really want to have a system where we can just do that billing out of our permit database so they don't have to have the duplication in their accounting database. So with a new database, we wanted an out-of-the-box solution. We didn't want to have to make up something that didn't already exist. We're a smaller agency. We contract out our IT services, so it needed to be something that our own staff could administer. We needed to support our permitting and compliance activities, you know, taking in applications, doing inspections, issuing violations, and taking in public complaints. It was really important for us to have an online portal so we can start accepting applications online. And I think the COVID-19 pandemic has really pushed everyone towards trying to make sure they move towards having online availability for submitting applications. And like I said, we want to have that monthly renewal process go through our permit database so that we don't have to have a duplicate database for accounting. And then we also want it to be cloud hosted. So in 2019, we initiated an RFP process to select a new vendor for our database project. And as after part of that process, we selected Acela's Civic platform. And this product had the features that we were looking for. As I mentioned, online access for our customers, permitting, inspections, and they also have a mobile app that our field inspectors can use. And we ended up going with the environmental health module because it had built in processes that were very similar to what we do. And so we were able to leverage that and customize those for ourselves for air quality. And this cloud hosting, we're hoping is going to be a more stable place for our data to reside. So now I'm going to have to stop and switch over to the website so I can show you what our database looks like. So when someone in the back office opens their Acela, this is what the page looks like. And it can be customized. Each staff person can rearrange these columns in any order that they so choose. There are filters here. You can add filters so you can look for exactly what you want. And I'll just open one of these. This is a permit record. All of the records in Acela, permits, applications, violations, complaints, all have the general same setup. Along the side on the left in the gray area, you can it says summary record, related records. All of the records have the same format, so it makes it a little bit easier to navigate. You know where to go, no matter what the record type is. And the place where we were really able to leverage the customization is in this area called data fields. And so this is where we can put in all the information that we might care about. For an emergency generator, we can put in the fuel type, the horsepower, the manufacturer. And so this is one of the areas where we were able to leverage putting in some custom data. And we also have a map, which has all of the parcel layer with parcel numbers and addresses, which we got from the three counties. So this is just our parcel here at 24580 Silver Cloud Court. And then I just also wanted to show you, this is the landing page for a person that is going to apply online. And so they log in, they set up their account, log in, and they're able to see, this is a test site. So you'll see some, these are not going to be like real record names, but they'll have access to see a list of all of their records that they've submitted to us. And then they also can go here and submit another application. So now I'm going to go back to my presentation. So in conclusion, we went live in Acela on July 19th, and we operated our legacy database for 5 years and never had an update to the software. And so one of the nice things about Acela is that every year they do 2 major updates, one in the fall and one in the spring. So in November, we're about to have another update to our system. And one of the benefits that we found with Acela is we were able to do a stepwise implementation. And this helps our staff get accustomed to the new database before we move forward with all of the features. So for example, we just started doing our online applications, and we've just been doing asbestos notifications. And this helps our accounting staff, because now we're taking in those applications and they're paying online through that portal. And so it's a learning process for all of our staff. It's a new way of doing things, but I'm happy to report that we've received 88% of our asbestos notifications and payments through our online portal. So I feel like it's been very successful. And this also helped us gauge how much handholding we were gonna have to do to help people navigate completing an application online. And I think that we found a lot of efficiencies, and we're going to be able to have these improved customer service options. And we're hoping that this will make it better for us internally and those externally who interact with us when they apply for permits or do asbestos notifications. And finally, myself and Cindy Searson are the database administrators. So we've done extra training. We just recently attended the Accelerate conference, and we'll do additional training to keep our skills in line with the updates as Acela rolls out those major updates that I mentioned. So with that, I will take any questions.
Thank you, Amy. What a huge step forward, and no light project, that's for sure. Let's see, I'll look to directors here for any hands. Don't see any at this point in time. Go to the public, not seeing anything.
Nothing sent in advance, sir.
Thank you, Siri. And just, you know, thank you, Amy, for your leadership on this. Any opportunity we can offer for, you know, an easier, smooth sailing experience to the constituency is great. So thanks a bunch. Awesome. Well, this is the closure of our business today. Our next meeting is on the 17th of November. I want to thank everybody for attending, and we'll go ahead and stand adjourned.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Right. Thank you.